Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Hour number two of our program. Welcome back. I'm Bill Shanks with Russ Brown. We are live here at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins, right next to the Museum of Aviation on Highway 247. We invite you to come in. First person to come in and say, "Philly suck," gets a free taco. Well, gets a free taco and gets to try a sneak preview of the May taco, the BLT taco, right? I think that was the deal that was made with Mr. Bass.
Yep.
By the way, we had someone say, David on Twitter, right, make a bacon and mac and cheese quesadilla.
Ooh, that does sound good.
Would that be better than a taco, you think? I don't know.
That might, with the texture of it, that might actually work better.
Because though, then you could kind of melt it, melt the cheese inside the quesadilla.
Yeah, and it's all chewy and gooey, and oh, that does sound good.
Where's Derek Bass?
Yeah, he's there. We need to consult with him.
That would be kind of a good thing to have, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. I like that too. All right, 478-646 ESPN is our number. We would like to hear your thoughts on the Braves from last night. Anything else going on in the world of sports? Getting in that slow period now where we are done with the NFL draft. Eddie from Acquard sent me this thing. I got to show you this, Russ. Oh, my gosh. And I'll have to ask him. I didn't have a chance to ask him where he got this from. It was from Twitter, obviously. Okay, Bill, that makes sense. It was from Twitter, and it was from the Atlanta Falcons, and it was this morning at 11:45, and the Falcons tweeted out, "We're not looking for shiny," and hashtag in brotherhood, and they had this crapola. Hold on, Russ. They had this picture of Dan Quinn, and he's in his all black, looking like Jerry Glanville wannabe, and he's saying, "It may not be shiny, but I don't think grit is real shiny." So they're trying to pump us up, Russ Brown.
Well, it took long enough.
How about that?
I mean, you know, you only spent $150 million on the quarterback. You might as well protect him.
It's about time. God, I hope he's got. You know what? Even at the expense of them staying around, mm-hmm, I hope these two offensive linemen work out and save Matt Ryan from physical harm. Because he was so abused last year. Yeah. It wasn't funny. It was just awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible to me to watch some of those games and then hear the complaints people had about whether it was Steve Sarkisian or Matt Ryan, or it's like, guys, you can't block. I mean, that to me, that falls on the guy making the personnel decisions, which in this case is Dan Quinn. I mean, if you can't protect your quarterback in the national, any level of football, you're not going to win. And he said at the end of the season, they had two offensive linemen on the team. They went and addressed it in free agency. They addressed it in the draft. And everything they've said for once has been consistent. And I don't know if, you know, the light bulb's finally gone off here, but I hope so. I hope that's the case.
They made such an error last year in retaining Andy LaVitre. I think that was their biggest error of all, because Russ, he was an aging offensive lineman who was at the end of his contract and had struggled to stay healthy in 2017. And really, after the great year he had in 2016, when he joined the Falcons and had that, he kind of with Chris Chester. But, you know, the combination of Chester retiring and then LaVitre getting hurt, and then them retaining LaVitre, just put them where they had to throw those guys who were just simply role players slash tweeners, don't you think they could be called, made that line weak, and they were not able to hold together. When you've got a weakness in your line of scrimmage, like on the offensive line, and it can only be one player. Look, it doesn't take much for a great line of scrimmage to be ordinary. And usually it has to do with one player not doing what he's supposed to do. And when LaVitre had those issues and they brought him back anyway. You know, Russ, that's what you think about when we're talking about Vic Beasley, is we may be saying at some point here in 2000, and 19, but they brought him back anyway. And I hate it for Vic Beasley because he's going to have so much pressure to try to do what is necessary for him to become sustainable for the long term for this franchise. I don't know if he can handle it. I don't know, because Levitre did not need to be brought back. His was mainly because of age and health. And Vic Beasley's is for production. They did not need to bring this kid back. But anyway, getting back to the offensive line, Levitre coming back was their error, don't you think, a year ago?
Yeah, well, and because he had the shoulder and of his age, and you didn't know if you could count on him. And they didn't do anything to reinforce that. They didn't. And then the other thing they were doing was they were talking about how you have to develop guys out of college now, but then they didn't draft anybody either.
No.
In last year's draft. So it kind of bit them in the butt.
Because you remember last year at this time after the draft, they were still talking about Joe Hall. I mean, Sean
Harlow. Harlow. That's right.
Remember?
They sure were.
Yeah. Orlando said, he came on and said, they're still talking about Sean Harlow. Yeah. We're like, you got to be kidding.
So, I think after last season, when you paid that much money to a quarterback and you see him get knocked around like that, and, you know, we joke all the time about how these quarterbacks can play forever now because they don't get hit. Well, that wasn't going to be the case for Matt Ryan. And the one thing I've never understood about this franchise is when you finally do find a franchise quarterback, well, how in the world do you not reinforce the offensive line to try to protect that guy? And as we've said all along, that doesn't guarantee that these two guys they draft are the answer. Time's going to tell on that. But you have to address the offensive line, and they've definitely done that. If it works, I think these two have saved their bacon, and I think the Falcons are going to be much better. And to me, what I like about it is, like, for example, if Chris Lidstrom is starting, then he's better than Carpenter and Brown, which is what you want, because we know what Carpenter and Brown have been in their career. So there's a nice baseline there. It's not like they had a salary cap issue, had to cut Brandon Fusco, and there's a warm body coming in to fill a spot. Now, there's going to be competition for these spots. And Lidstrom in particular, if he can rise to the occasion and take that guard spot, that's really good news for the Atlanta Falcons. And then the attitude of these two kids and reading some of their comments, they've got that nasty, mean attitude that they don't, frankly, don't really give a damn about anything other than protecting the quarterback and opening up holes in the run game.
I really never sensed anything like that from Lamar Holmes and Peter Kahns. I'm not trying to be smart, but I mean that was there was no, wow, look at these guys, they're mean as hell, they're not going to take it anymore. They just were kind of sad, to be honest. That was a horrible selection of offensive linemen, which is why there is some skepticism about what has taken place with these two kids, but hopefully they'll prove everybody wrong. All right, 478-646 ESPN. Ken and Macon. Hey, Killer.
How you doing, Bill?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I'm going to ask you about, you heard anything about the Georgia football baseball team? They're about number six in the nation, number four in another thing.
They had a crappy weekend at Mississippi State. They got swept. It was awful. And I haven't heard anything, an update on Emerson Hancock. I don't know what his deal is for this weekend against Florida, but they had a bad weekend. They got to bounce back tonight.
They said it was a pitcher called Tucker Maxwell. I don't know if you heard about him. I wish the Braves would get him some way. He's a good pitcher for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, well, their pitching's been their forte for sure this year. But they had a bad. This could be a very important week for this team, though, because they obviously have been highly ranked all year. They had a horrible weekend in Mississippi against the other Bulldogs, and now they've got a. They got to bounce back. They got to have a good game tonight against the Citadel, and then they have Florida this week. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a real challenge for them. And you know, I not knowing what they've said about Emerson Hancock of his potential return. I mean, they need him back, obviously. That's for sure.
Yeah, I thought I was happy about the Braves winning last night, but I thought that San Diego might have helped the Braves win that game by throwing the ball away, but. I'm hoping that they can get that bullpen straight some way, but I wish they could have. If I'd been the general manager, I would have got Greg Kimbrel about November, December. But I guess they don't want to spend the money, so I guess we just got to put up what they got.
What do you think of Webb?
I thought he was a pretty good little pitcher. You know, it's kind of hard to tell because he didn't pitch that much for the Braves, so I'm not very sure of him yet. Most of the time, I just think they got a bunch of Band-Aids, and they still hadn't made the decision to go get a good closer or something.
Well, we'll see what they do. Ken, thank you for calling me. I think there's obviously still time for them to look into Craig Kimbrell, and I don't know the circumstances for where he is in his negotiations or how many people he's actually talking to or teams he's talking to. All I know is it's the last day of April and he's at home, and that's just unbelievable to me. It still remains unbelievable. But look, I know it's a very small sample size, but why not Jacob Webb? Why can't this kid be it? Look, if they're not going to go out there and get Craig Kimbrell, if they're going to have to rely on the Jerry Blevins deals to get them through this summer until they do make a big deal or either bring in Kimbrell, why not Jacob Webb? Why can't he be the one to get the opportunity? I want to tell you something. Even with Luke Jackson and A.J. Minter available tonight, if they have a save situation, I don't know, did he pitch on Sunday? Did Webb pitch on Sunday? Yeah, he got the win. So that would be three games in a row, so they may stay away from him tonight, which is unfortunate. But next time there's a safe situation, I hope it's Jacob Webb. I still don't have a whole lot of faith in Luke Jackson. I may have to apologize for this, but I don't like his control can be, his command. It's not his control. His command can be a lot out of whack at times. And I like what I saw last night. Maybe this kid, like I compared him earlier in the show to Greg McMichael and Kerry Lineberg, just kind of coming out of nowhere. Why not? Let's see. If we've got to rely on internal options, we know what Minter can do and what he's done like on Saturday night. We've seen the good and the bad of Luke Jackson. Johnny Venter's not going to be closer when he comes back. Well, let's see what Jacob Webb can do. Why not?
Might as well. Can it get much worse? I mean, that's – and I love that approach. It's basically we're going to try you. If it works, we'll stick with you. If it doesn't, we're going to move on to somebody else. There's no preconceived notions. There's no this guy was groomed to be this. We look at this guy as this type of pitcher, or this guy's going to be this kind of a specialist, or this guy's going to work this situation. It just seems to me, until you can know who your guy in the ninth inning is to nail down the save, I love the approach that they're going to give everybody a shot and try everybody until they find somebody that works. And I also feel like once they find somebody that works, everything else will kind of fall into place and settle down from there. And you know what? If it's Jacob Webb, great. Great story. I vote yes. I mean, I like what I've seen so far. I don't care who steps up and takes that gig. You know, they were saying on the broadcast last night they might leave Timlin in there to just go out back out there for the ninth inning. That's whatever. I try anything, because the good news is we said yesterday, nobody's run away with this division, but it may be the team that solves their bullpen issue first is the winner of the NL East. So let's try everything right now while you still can, while you're still in it.
I always hate that the Braves are able to say no one's run away with the division, because it almost gives them – excuse to, like, well, we're okay because nobody's run away with the division yet, which kind of weasels their way out of the fact that they didn't really answer the problem of over the all season of fixing the bullpen. Regardless, they're right. Nobody has run away with the division so far. It is tight in the National League East. I think it will stay tight for most of the year. Phillies have plenty of question marks. They've been, I mean, you think about the fact they're 16-12. Game over 500 since they beat the Braves in the first three games of the season. Well, the Braves are 500. The Mets are 500. The Nationals have been off. You know what's wrong with the Nationals? Their bullpen. You think Atlanta's bullpen is awful. Washington's bullpen has been horrendously bad, like a run and a half worse ERA. So John Smoltz said this, what, last week when he was at that golf tournament and was talking about it? The team that perhaps fixes their bullpen, like you just said, maybe with Craig Kimbrell, maybe without him. But that's the other part of it, and I'm not trying to have an excuse for Craig Kimbrell not being with the Braves. The bad thing is the other teams that are having bullpen problems are not going after him either. There are plenty of teams that right now need Craig Kimbrell, whether they have a closer or not. Because you go and look at MLB.com and you look at some of the – bullpen ERAs of some of these teams, and it's awful. They're awful bullpen. And I don't have any runs or information to prove my point here as far as comparing this year to last year. I just know I've seen the ERAs and seen the numbers. They're not good. And you know what it goes to? I still say this, Russ. It goes to the fact that teams are still undervaluing middle relief. I wish I could almost see an ERA split between the first three innings, the second three innings, and the last three innings. I wonder if the middle three innings are where those runs are being scored to have these bullpen numbers go sky high.
Yeah, well, and I saw a stat, and it, you know, it can change, obviously, but it's about a week and a half ago where this is the first time in a while in the history of baseball where bullpen ERA in the overall the entire league is higher than starter ERA. And I think what's happening is because you have more and more teams working with this innings limits as much as pitch counts. You know, pitch counts were the thing like 5 or 6 years ago. It almost seems like innings limits are a bigger thing where they're really hamstringing these young kids. I mean, starting pitchers throwing, what, 80 pitches a game now, basically? And what I think what they're finding out is while statistics may have shown that a starting pitcher was less effective the third time through the order, is that a starting pitcher, even though he's less effective compared to himself, is he more effective than the people that are coming in the fifth or sixth inning? Because basically what you've done now is with a 13-man bullpen, you've added a relief pitcher. So that's 30 guys right there. And you're using guys in the fifth and sixth inning where you wouldn't have used them before. So, I mean, you start to add up how many different arms you're going to need to get through this. And every time you add more arms to the equation, you dilute the quality of the pitcher. So I think that's what we're dealing with right here. And, you know, that's the thing about this statistical analysis stuff. The numbers exist for a reason. And if you don't understand the reason the numbers are what they are, you're going to run into some problems because your formula is not going to work.
The funny thing for me, though, is that my argument, I think, can be made without even one number. Well, that's not true. There are a couple of numbers involved. Number one, I think that if the game is telling us pitchers can't go past 100 pitches, there's your number, 100 pitches, and that starting pitchers can't face a lineup three times, there's the other number, three times, middle relief, man, that is the key, and that's why I still say the Braves are going to have to really take a look at some of these young pitchers like Bryce Wilson. Like I put him in the bullpen today in Gwinnett. I'd say, you know what, I don't care about this team, Gwinnett, sorry, God bless you. I'm going to put these two kids in here to see because they're – for me now, for me. Tukey, I worry about Tukey. I'm a little more on the fence about Tukey. But for me, two pitchers in that Gwinnett rotation that are not going to be in the Atlanta rotation for the long term are Colby Allard and Bryce Wilson. And I'm almost close to putting Tukey in there too. But still, those two are the main ones, a righty and a lefty. Wilson's a righty, Allard's a lefty. Go ahead and put them in the bullpen. Let's see what they can do. Let's see how they do and if they can get any better out there. I think it's worth the shot. And I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But I am encouraged by Jacob Webb. I think it's fun to see what Jacob Webb can do moving forward. And we've had those no-names come out of nowhere before, like Greg McMichael. And like Kerry Leinberg, and in a way, an 18th round draft pick 5 years ago is kind of in that same category because I guarantee you before even last night, not many people knew Jacob Webb at all. Probably didn't know that he was on the roster, didn't know that he was in spring training, but he's proving something so far with 6 scoreless appearances, and that was fun to watch last night. All right, 478-646 ESPN. We're watching Mike Soroka here pitch to the opposing pitcher, and his stuff was just outstanding. He's really good. I can't see how anybody can say that Fried and Soroka haven't locked themselves into that rotation. If they're healthy, they're in it. There's no doubt in my mind. And maybe one day they'll shave to look like grown men. He ain't never shaved in his life, has he?
No.
Good grief.
No, he looks like he's about 17.
He does. He is. But I would tell you, I love that kid. They're both so great. Russ, first spring training now, 18 years old. He sits in the dugout with me for 30 minutes talking pitch. He didn't know me from Adam.
Yeah.
That's just the kid he is.
All right.
He loves talking pitching.
Well, it's Peter Moreland. He formed it as a question. I think he meant it as a statement. You know, the education in Canada is a lot better. I mean,
Moreland.
I mean, he's asked the question if it was, but I think Soroka's the poster child for, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you must be.
This kid's really smart.
You know why this kid's doing so well early on, though? And I had a scout tell me this a couple years ago. He was so advanced with the Canadian national team that traveled around. They played in Florida a lot. I mean, it's not like they were up there in Vancouver cold all damn day. You know, they got out and played around the country. He played in a lot of national tournaments that really put him in high-pressure situations for a 16- and 17-year-old that a lot of regular kids in the States aren't in.
Yeah.
And that helped him a lot, I think, because he's unflappable out there. He's just like he's in complete control. Ho-hum, another pitching performance for the big leagues. All right, 478-646 ESPN. I haven't seen anything on Ender. Have you?
No, he's not in the lineup. Matt Joyce is in the lineup today, but I haven't seen anything official on Ender, whether or not he's going to be on the IL or just day-to-day.
Well, if they do put him on the IL, you know who they need to call up? Adam Duvall.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Is he hitting down there?
8 home runs.
Is he starting?
Uh-huh.
See, that's the one, that guy, he's got to play every day. I'm telling you, Bill, some guys just need to see pitches, and he's one of them.
He is really doing well, and I'm so happy for him because he's such a nice young man as well. I interviewed him in spring training, but no, Russ, he's homing in 5 consecutive games for Triple A Gwinnett, and he is hitting .315, .398 OBP, 8 home runs, 19 RBI, 6 doubles, and 2 triples.
Good for him.
Isn't that good?
That's great to hear.
And I wouldn't mind at all if he came up and got a little playing time if Ender, I don't want Ender to be hurt, but if he is and he's got to go on the IL, let's see Adam Duvall, see what he can do. We're at the Taco Shed in Winter Robins where they are serving tacos. Come on in. They've got great variety of tacos. We'd love to see you here. We're near the Museum of Aviation on Highway 247 here in Winter Robins. We'll take a break. Back with more of your phone calls, more sports talk on this Tuesday right after this. Thanks for being with us here on this Tuesday, Taco Tuesday here at the Taco Shed. Or it looks like Ender Inciarte will avoid the IL. Brian Sicker just said he expects to have Inciarte back in the lineup tomorrow. Inciarte said he feels good today, could play. All right, well, that's good. We don't want anybody to get hurt.
Well, and the thing is with this 4-man bench, I mean, you don't really have time to him and Hall. I mean, he's got to be able to play, right? I mean, you can't go into a game with 3 guys on the bench.
No, not really. They can't. They'd rather put somebody on the IL for 10 days. Because you're right. It's too slim of a. They've got to change the roster requirements of this sport here in the next CBA, don't they? I mean, because part of the problem is, I think, all right, it's 25 men on the roster. But, Russ, 4 of your starting pitchers are not going to play every day.
Yeah.
So it's really a 21-man roster. If you really look at it like that, it's a 21-man roster you're dealing with.
Right. It is. There's a part of me that says yeah, and it's – but the part of me that says no is just fighting against the way this game's changed. You know, to me –
I think it's too late for that, don't
right,
you?
Right, right, exactly. It's like the DH. I'm not the biggest fan of the DH, but I think we're too far down the rabbit hole. But to me, it just dumbs the game down. I mean, it just – you're making it – you know, all these things that – used to be in place for managers. I mean, eventually the managers are just going to be obsolete. I mean, just roll the ball out there and let them play because, you know,
Isn't that funny, though? Because think of the other sports, Russ, and how dominant the head coach is for a team. Look at college football programs. Of the primary person for every college football program is not a player because of the turnover of 2 to 3 years, let's be honest. The coach is the primary personality. It's Kirby Smart. It's Nick Saban. It's Dan Mullen at Florida. NFL, the head coach, I think, is still a very vital part of the equation with what you have to deal with. NBA, maybe not as much because we always have the perception that stars are in control of the game and who cares about who the coach is. See Tyronn Lue. Baseball, though, Baseball, the managers in baseball don't even get to pick their coaching staff. They don't even have the power afforded to them that other sports coaches have. And it's always been weird to me. But I think it's even more so now than 20, 30 years ago because of the analytical approach. And they are. There are people who believe that they don't need major league managers, that you just need tacticians down there running the game. And
yeah.
I think Brian Sicker has showed us why that's a stupid concept because of you have to. Well, it's funny. Why are they called managers in baseball? To me, it's because you don't have 81 games or 16 games or 12 games. You have 162 games, and you literally have to manage people. Bobby Cox, okay, was he the best tactician in the world? I don't know. You know what? We're not in the dugout every hour of every game to know that. Sometimes I thought he was great. Sometimes I thought he was stupid. Because that's what a manager is going to be looked at because of the number of decisions they make. But as far as managing people, there's no one better. And I don't think football coaches have other people to help them manage people. You know, they have, all right, you're a linebacker. Go see your damn linebacker coach. Don't bother me. I'm a head coach. You know, that's kind of the concept that's in place, pro or college, these days. But in baseball, there are 25 guys, man. They're all yours, and that's why you are, I think, because why you're called the manager. But it's funny that even major league managers are not allowed to pick their coaches. They're selected for them. And I'm not just talking about the Braves. It's not just the Braves. It's other teams as well that's not the manager's call. And can you imagine if Greg McGarrity told Kirby Smart, "You're not picking the offensive coordinator. I am."
No, you're right. That ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
it's just not gonna happen. I don't know. It's interesting. And I say this as a fan of the game. I worry and I'm concerned because I think baseball is looking at all the wrong things. And I think there's almost a level of arrogance that's associated.
Free taco for you.
There we go. But I just, I just think there's almost a level of arrogance with some of the statistical side of things that, you know, the people can't. You have to play it a certain way, and you have to do it a certain way, and you have to do this a certain way, and I think that rubs people the wrong way. We just had a World Series between Boston and L.A. that wasn't really watched. The Dodgers, some of their best players weren't even playing because of the handedness of the Red Sox pitcher. And I think it's hurting the sport because a lot of us that look at what's going on and it's just confusing. Like, well, when you hear, oh, well, the pitcher can't go through the yard, why not? Why is somebody that's never thrown a pitch in a major league game telling me what a starting pitcher can and can't do? I think it's hurting the sport.
When we were talking to Murph the other day at Murph's restaurant, and we were talking, he said that he had a conversation with Ron Guidry and Goose Gossage. One pitcher in Ron Guidry who loved to throw complete games. What did he have, 98 or some? He was pushing three triple digits with his number of complete games. And then another reliever who probably had a large portion of his saves be more than one inning. Because back in the day when Rich Gossage was a closer for the Yankees, that's what closers did. They went more than one inning if they needed to. That's why you had a 10-man pitching staff. When I was a kid, that's how many pitchers were on a staff. You had 10 pitchers. You had your eight position players who were starters. And you had seven guys on the bench. You know, sometimes you would have a third catcher because you could afford to. You didn't have to worry about that. Then it got to 11 pitchers. Then it got to 12 pitchers. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, now it's 13 pitchers. And it's just gradually. That almost in itself shows the gradual transformation of the game is the gradual change from 10 to 11 to 12 to 13 pitches for a pitching staff.
Right, and then if you expand the rosters from that point, that's why I say it dumbs down the game because someone like myself, I'd say, well, you're getting too carried away and you're not able to match up. There's not a lot of strategy for the manager now because he's got four guys riding on the bench, and that's not really going to work. And if the solution to that is to expand the rosters to make it work, that's why I say it dumbs down the game. And I'm not a fan of that. I'm really not.
Well, my only thing is, I just wish it was something like in the NFL where you could say, all right, and I think 28 would probably be enough. you have 28 people on your team, but 25 are active, because you're going to have at least three that are going to be inactive, which are basically your last three starting pitchers. And then you have, because we're not going to get away from 13-man pitching staffs. This is not going to be there. And I don't know how, look at Charlie Culberson. We were talking about Charlie Culberson of how he came in last night and pinch hit for Soroka. Charlie's not been able to play very much. You know, he's had Camargo all around. I mean, look, you want to look at one of the detriments of having Camargo be the bounce-around Martin Prado type player. It's mainly because it's hurt Charlie Culberson getting more playing time. When there's an infielder who's going to have a day off, guess who's going to get the first crack at it? Johan Camargo. If there's an outfielder that's going to get a day off like today, well, it's Matt Joyce. And if Adam Duvall comes back, it'll probably be Adam Duvall because he's a natural outfielder. Charlie Culberson, while a great pinch hitter as far as getting starts, his numbers are going to be cut in half from last year because of that. And that's a shame. And because you do want to get your players some playing time, especially when you have good players, not guys who are just filling out the roster. But Charlie Culberson is a good player. We wondered last year after the season if Charlie Culberson would be a player that people may want to come after as a regular player for some position because he had that good of a year. But it's harder now with Camargo being the go-to reserve, super utility guy, whatever you want to call him. And now it's kind of hurting Charlie Culberson, which, you know, I still value Charlie very much because I – and you know what? Speaking of Culberson, look, I'd have kept Soroka in there last night. I know why Snit did it. I understand, but, man – I would really contradict myself and screaming and hollering on a regular basis that pitchers needed to stay in the game longer if I would have said, yeah, that was the right move. Now, I understand why he did it, and we know that they are going to protect these young pitchers, and he thought that they could have some insurance runs if Charlie had gotten a hit. But, man, the problem was for me, Russ, Mike Soroka was cruising at that point.
Look, Snit played with fire last night and he didn't get burned, right? I mean, it worked. They won the game. There was a lot of Bill, there's a lot of reasons I wouldn't have done that last night. First and foremost, the bullpen sucks. Let's just say that. Soroka was pitching well. He hadn't thrown very many pitches. But what really had me more worried, and all the way through the rest of the game, if San Diego figures out it puts two on the board in the top of the ninth, you go into extra innings and Brian McCann's your only player on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what had me concerned as much as anything. But you know what? He saw a chance to put the game away and he went for it. And you know, it didn't blow up in his face. So hey, the Braves won. At the end of the night, the Braves won. I understand why it was done. And Charlie hit it hard. So it's one of those that's managing. And I didn't hear any of the post game last night, but somebody told me Snit said in the post game that's about the toughest decision he's made all year so far.
That's it. And it also to me showed, even though the move meant that he was going to go to his bullpen, it also showed the fear that he has in his bullpen because of him trying to go for it to bottom of the sixth inning.
Yeah.
He was trying to get a lead in the bottom of the sixth inning so his bullpen would not be only up by two. They'd be up by four, and there'd be a little bit more breathing room to where they wouldn't have so much pressure and choke. I mean, that was part of what I thought when he did it. I mean, I wasn't very happy with it, and I would have let him in, but I understood. And we know how these guys are going to be with young pitchers. We know how they're going to protect them. We know how they're going to overprotect them. It's not just protection. It's overprotection. That's just kind of the way it is. I let him in there because I'm telling you, the kid could have gone another inning. He could have gone another inning or two. He was that, and again, we were watching him pitch here in front of us on the replay, and there were a couple of pitches that were a little low on that – in that zone, like the last pitch that he made where he struck out Hosmer, right?
Well, I mean, what do they say? The strike zones, well, armpits to the kneecaps. I think last night for Hunter Williams, it was belly button to ankle.
It was ankle, yeah.
That was a little low.
But you know what? It was in the zone, and he was consistent with it, and that's why Hunter was giving him the pitch. But still, I mean, he was placing it where he wanted to place it. He had great command last night, and that's another reason why I like – but I go back to – and I know there was obviously a run-scoring situation – where you could have taken a bigger lead, you could have done more. But I'll tell you this, that's one of those situations where what was he at? Was he at 79 pitches?
I think it was 81.
81, okay. I knew it wasn't very much over that. I would have taken him back out there And two-run lead, I said, okay, look, Mike, you know how we're pushing it by going to seventh inning. You're leading the way here, dude. You know, you show me you're okay. I mean, what I hate more than anything is when they go and they're doing that and then they give up a blooper and then they take him out. No, you give up a hard-hit ball, then I'm going to think about taking you out. And he did that with Fulte the other night. You know, Fulte kind of gave up some hard-hit balls there. And that was the seventh inning as well. And then that was it for him. But I would have left T-Mac out there, but I'd never take him out. They have to drag them out for me. I mean, I'm like, especially now, this bullpen being putrid. Good Lord. I mean, I don't know. Teron's pitching tonight. Teron's got a rubber arm, knock on wood, never hurt before. Let him pitch. Give me a reason to take you out and put the bullpen in. Josh Donaldson, oh, my God, here we go. Josh Donaldson, a late scratch today with right calf soreness. Missed time earlier this year with left calf strain. Again, like Ender, this is precautionary. No, this is paying a $23 million guy not to be able to play consecutive games. I mean, you know, come on, dude. I mean, we knew we were going to. I mean, when I was told in spring training this guy ain't going to play day games after night games, I'm like, are you paying him $23 million? Are you freaking kidding me?
I think you're selling his barrel percentage short, Bill.
His barrel percentage. Oh, my God.
I don't think you're looking at that BAPIP very closely.
I should have paid attention in Ms. McLean's algebra class to understand barrel percentage. All right, we're going to take a break and go on Twitter at Bill Shanks. Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation, 478-646-ESPN. We're at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins on Highway 247 right near the Museum of Aviation. Come by. Say hello, get you a taco. Back with more on this Taco Tuesday right after this. Back on our program here at the Taco Shed, where we are serving tacos. Come get a taco. Derek Bass is here, free falling, and he'll make you a taco. Say that again.
Philly suck.
Philly suck. How about that?
Oh, you get a free taco, sir. Congratulations.
Hey, yeah, congratulations. Awesome. Good for you.
Thank you. Yeah, we just had a winner, didn't we?
We had a winner. Winner, chicken dinner.
He got it to go, so we don't.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's okay. No, I wanted to see, you know, how he liked it.
I'm sure he said he liked the oyster one, right?
Yeah, he'll let us know.
Yeah, he'll let you know.
Breaking news, it doesn't suck.
Nice.
See, he's already told you. I think I want some Cheerios. I don't know if I want another taco or not.
Churros. Just so people don't get confused, we do not have Cheerios. Cheerios.
You got any honey nuts back there?
You can't even say it now.
I don't even know.
Now I'm messing you up.
Churros.
Not Cheerios.
That's correct.
I don't know if I've ever. Have you ever had Cheerios before?
Who has not had Cheerios?
Yes, I've had. Have you not had Cheerios?
Well, I was such a Cocoa Krispies guy. You know, I didn't really. I'm sure I've had.
They say it's good for your heart. You should eat those now.
Especially. Flabbergasted that you haven't had Cheerios.
I mean, I think I've probably had Cheerios, but I mean, I like two kinds of. I like two cereals. Cocoa Krispies,
and
Fruit Loops.
It's two good cereals.
Fruit Loops, when you had the Fruit Loops sitting in the milk for a while and they're kind of soggy, are really good eating.
I'd rather have an Apple Jack, I think.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, that's my go-to.
Really? Y'all like Apple Jack?
Love Apple Jacks.
Really?
Who doesn't like Apple Jacks?
Me.
Okay. Have you tried Apple Jacks?
I don't know if I've ever had Apple Jacks before.
See, how do you know you don't like them?
Because I like Cocoa Krispies.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you won't like Apple Jacks.
I'm going to Kroger today and give me some Cocoa Krispies and milk.
And Apple Jacks. Just try the.
I'm pretty sure, other than the fiber stuff old people eat, there's not a cereal on the aisle I won't eat.
Really? You're like that much?
I love cereal.
Wow, we've been on the show for 12 years and you've never
Fruity
said
Pebbles,
this.
Cocoa Puffs, Cheerios, Pops, Apple Jacks. I love cereal.
Really?
I don't eat it much because I'd be big as this room, but yeah.
I know.
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms.
Yeah, with the mushrooms.
I'm
marshmallows.
Mushrooms. What are you doing?
Mushrooms?
Wow.
I just do tacos.
He gone. Wait, all right, rank, since you're such a cereal aficionado.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I'm just fat.
Rank them? What's your favorite?
My favorite is Apple Jacks.
Really? Your number one?
Oh, yeah.
Yours too?
Number one.
Your number one are Apple Jacks.
Then there's like a second tier.
Okay.
And it's like Fruity Pebbles, the Cocoa Pebbles or Puffs.
Cocoa Puffs.
Either one works. Fruit Loops. The little, what are the yellow ones? The Pops? Is that what they call them? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Rice Krispies?
No, not Rice Krispies. I didn't like Rice Krispies.
You didn't like Rice Krispies?
Because they get soggy too fast.
Now you got to mouth through them.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I like to go slow and enjoy it.
What are you on strike or something? Why'd you put your mic down? So
he put himself in timeout.
Yeah, he kind of laughed. He just kind of like.
Apple Jacks and I'm done. That's it.
Really? So you don't like? Do you like Rice Krispies?
Yes.
You had to put like a lot of sugar in Rice Krispies.
A lot of sugar. Yeah, that's why I don't eat them anymore. A lot of sugar in the Rice Krispies.
Yeah, that wasn't.
The Rice Krispie treats.
See, I don't like those. I'm not big on Rice Krispie treats.
All right.
I used to like Rice Krispies once in a while. Rice Krispies got old.
I think I would cut up a banana and put in Rice Krispies.
Yeah, there you go.
Done that. Yeah.
So how about Frosted Flakes?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You like great. That? Yeah. They're great.
They are.
Yeah, that was good, Russ.
They're great.
What do you think about Frosted Flakes? They're great.
They're great.
So you don't like Cocoa Krispies?
Yeah, I like Cocoa Krispies.
Have you had Cocoa Krispies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they turn the milk chocolate, right? That's the.
Oh my God!
That's
so
the key
good.
To the whole thing.
If you see me at Kroger at about 7:30, maybe down in the Cocoa Krispies aisle. I even like the Kroger ripoff of Cocoa Krispies.
Generic.
You can't
brand.
Screw that up. Yeah, it's delicious.
What are the ones with the frosting on one side and then the oats on the other?
Oh frosted yeah,
oats. That's
frosted
that,
oats.
That's that fiber thing.
Yeah. Pretty good though.
You like those?
Yeah. Those are pretty good.
At your age, you need
well,
that.
Is that what your grandmother's
wait, you're older than I am.
That's right. We're both 1970s kids, though.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
So, wow, I didn't know you were such a cereal craze guy. I'm
you
impressed.
Can do breakfast, lunch, and dinner cereal?
I mean, I could. I don't,
have you?
But I could.
So we've probably. Learned today two things life. About yeah. the two of you. Number one, that Russ likes cereal more than we knew. And number two, that you've never had breakfast at night.
That's disturbing.
I've
never craved breakfast at night.
You've never thought like, all right, what am I going to eat for dinner? And I don't want a taco tonight, which I know.
You can't go anywhere in town. Well, I guess you can. Yeah.
You could go to
IHOP, whatever.
Yeah. Well, you've never been to Waffle House at night and had your omelet?
No, I haven't.
He's lying.
Come on.
You've never had that at night?
I mean, at 2 in the morning after a couple of beverages.
Yeah.
That's different.
Well, that's
that
night.
Different. That is different.
That's a different situation.
That's not dinner.
That's fourth meal.
That's like an early breakfast.
That's rehab. That's rehab meal.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, no, everybody's done that. But so
like at 6 in the evening, I've never had grits.
You've never wanted to go to I don't like Cracker Barrel, but a lot of people do, God bless them, but I mean you've never gone to Cracker Barrel and said I want some whatever they serve for breakfast.
Nope.
Okay.
Negative.
Never gone to the Shoney's breakfast bar at night.
No. I didn't even know they serve it at night.
Breakfast. Oh, you should be on what, Thursday?
Thursday night.
Yeah.
Really?
Dude.
No, never done.
Oh man, those French toast sticks.
Oh my God. The grits and the hash browns and the cheese all mixed into one bowl. Dude, at night, big
I like
time.
Grits, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well,
you
try
should
it.
Try it sometime.
Yeah,
man.
You should try it. He's making tacos.
I'll dig it. Tacos.
On Sunday, you can go have breakfast at night. In Waycross, they used to serve breakfast at night at Shoney's and Waycross. I don't know if they do in Forsyth. That's the only place that has it. No, what has a Shoney's now is Ashburn, down the very tip end or the bottom end of our listing area. Ashburn has a Shoney's. So we have two Shoney's in the listing area, Forsyth and Ashburn. Kind of at the start of it and the end of it.
No making no Warner Robins.
No making no Warner Robins. Oh, my God. When I moved here in 96, what did they have? Probably five Shoney's in Macon and four in Warner Robins. One in Perry, one in Byron. Probably had four in Houston County and... What?
They shut down? They're still...
They're gone.
You said there's one in Ashburn.
And
franchise is still going. Still
yeah.
Not
they just shut them down here.
Because nobody eats breakfast at dinner.
So. I don't think that was it.
Well,
I think they were just not clean.
Oh.
It's at least the one I went to.
Wasn't clean?
Yeah.
You stayed and ate?
Well, no. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, over time you notice that things aren't being taken care of, you know. But, yeah, you need to try the – so you've never gone home like, I want some eggs. Russ, you've done that, haven't you?
Hmm?
Cheese eggs at night.
Oh, yeah. Come on, you come home and mom is making, like, pancakes and grits and sausage. No,
I'll make an egg sandwich.
Yeah?
That ain't breakfast.
But that's not.
That ain't breakfast. That's
not scrambled and with grits and bacon and all that.
No.
By the way, we got a 98 on our health score here at the Taco Show.
That's congratulations. Yes, that's great.
You. Thanks.
Well, that's
hard work. You know,
something else I noticed that I want to compliment you on because I don't think enough people take care of this stuff is you make sure your tables aren't wobbly. I really appreciate that.
You're right.
No, because I go to places and the damn table's wobbly.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, fix your table.
That sucks.
It's all about where they're at because people come in and move the tables. You know, they put two tables together, and then we got to make sure they're in the right spot when they leave. So it's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You got to keep your eye on it.
Thank you.
Yes. That's good. Well, that means you care. You have concern and pride once you're.
I don't want to sit at the
You don't just say, I'll let them sit out there to the heck with them.
I don't need my drink almost spilling every time.
No,
right.
Touch the table.
Y'all want the updated Braves lineup?
Sure.
Ozzy, Dansby, Freddie, Acuna, Markakis, Camargo, McCann, Joyce, Tehran. So we get the Ozzy and Dansby 1-2 show. I want to see what happens with this lineup.
Did you hear Ozzy last night say that he really likes leading off?
Can you tell?
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear Brian Sicker say last night he really likes Ozzy leading off?
And Ozzy said, C-ball, hit ball.
C-ball, hit ball.
That's it. So he does real good in the leadoff spot.
I love him up there.
So prediction score?
Well, our show's not over yet. We got another.
Oh, you
got
to wait.
You got another hour to go.
Stay tuned.
You're gonna do pick the clip.
Can I do mine?
Are you leaving?
Well, maybe. I guess not.
He's gotta go feed the dog.
I guess if I have to stay.
Who's your pick to click tonight?
Freddie's got to come out. He had a little slump. So
he didn't get on base last night.
So we got to go Freddie.
Go Freddie. All right, give us your pick to click. Maybe we should do a pick to click. Gets free taco.
Okay, wait. Two already. Yeah, let's go for one more.
Back from the taco shed as we continue here on the Bill Shank Show.